traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, Harness Racing fans, it's Steve Wolf and our co-founder of the International Equine Network, Scott Miller's on board, and we've got this week's edition of Flying Turns, and boy, we got a lot of things happening last week, this week, harness racing, thoroughbred, chuck wagon, dressage eventing, carriageways, and Wellington. What else, Scott?
Well, I'll tell you, that about covers about half of what we're going to be doing here soon. You know, the good thing about it is, being in South Florida, you know, we've got so much going around, you know, down here, and so many good trainers and horses here for all the big events coming up this summer. And it kind of like ended and started up in Orlando last week with you went up to the Hall of Fame Awards.
Well, yeah, the United States Harness Riders Association, it's the annual Dan Patch Awards weekend. It was the annual meeting for the Harness Riders Association, which things are going pretty strong with. But all eyes or ears, per se, was on Sunday night's Dan Patch Awards and who was going to be named Harness Horse of the Year. We had talked in a past couple shows that it was going to be what I thought maybe a close contest, that Greenshoe, the excellent trotter, he was voted Trotter of the Year, and rightly so. His statistics were awesome, and he just missed the Hamiltonian by a neck, which would have definitely capped him and possibly put him in contention for Harness Horse of the Year. But it came down to one of the two pacers, the three-year-old colt Better's Wish, who had an outstanding season, and the great pacing mare Sharton N, who last year lost Horse of the Year honors to McWicked. But guess what, racing fans? This year, Sharton N was not overwhelming, but she was voted Harness Horse of the Year, the first pacing mare ever to receive that title.
I tell you, you know, just to look at her journey that she had to get there to the end of the year, you know, was phenomenal. Do you think that she's going to have a tough journey like that this coming year, or is it going to be a little
bit... You know, Scott, she showed a little bit already in that she just qualified for the Jim King Jr. stable in 150, 1-2 at Dover Downs. And she just won by a head, but that's her first tune-up. I mean, she'll be racing this coming week in at Dover Downs, and then she'll be off to Yonkers for the Matchmaker Series. And that's 5 weeks of elimination races and then a $400,000 final. So if she comes back to any form that she was last year, there's no reason she could not defend her title.
Do you think that she'll have to run against the colts and the geldings, you know, in order to get through the season?
I think it all depends on how she races. If she is overly dominant against the mares and Tim Tietrich, who not only drives her but owns a piece of her, if he feels, you know, she's up to the task, she may take on the boys. She can do so in perhaps Lexington. She could do so in the Breeders' Crown. There's the Canadian Pacing Derby. There's a number of events that they could possibly try her in, but I don't think they're, you know, they have to, it's a wait-and-see attitude. I'm pretty sure that they're gonna pick their spots. They're not gonna over race her. Last year she had a string of 14 straight wins, and then at the end of the season she started to tail off. But for her tailing off, that meant she finished second instead of winning.
You know, maybe we can every week on the show when she gets rolling here, maybe we can give an update on her and just kind of follow her all year long, you know, and see you know, how she gets there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she was so awesome now heading into her third season. And in retrospect, she's turning 7 years old. So she's in the prime of her life. So she's sound enough. She could go against the boys in a couple times. She could have another great season. We could be talking about her again next year. In fact, she received 83 first-place votes, while Better's Wish was second with 42 votes, and the Trotter Green Shoe was third with only 14 votes. So the people were definitely looking at the Pacers, but Chardonnay had nearly twice as many first-place votes. She was overwhelmingly picked as the horse of the year. I also have to mention that a couple other horses received the first-place votes. The trotting mare Manchego got three votes. The pacing mare Wari Ubrut got two votes. And Atlanta Six-Pack and When Doves Cry each got one vote. But all I can say about that is the people that voted for these horses for Horse of the Year probably should be taken off the list, because there was no way any of them could compete with the three top vote getters. And right. And the voting really came out as perhaps it should be. But also at the meetings for the Harness Writers, there was other stuff too. I mean, Chardonnay, of course, stole the evening. And I have to say, at many awards dinners, people towards the end of the event, they're packing their bags and heading home, whether they got to drive someplace or, you know, 40 awards was too much for them. But this right. year, not only was the crowd respectful to all the speakers that took place, and no one really dragged it out too long, but everybody stayed to see who was the winner, because they really, really didn't know. And, of course, when it was Chardonnay, that crew up on stage was screaming and shouting and jumping for joy. And it's a great, great time in their lives. I mean, how many times, Scott, can you ever say that you either owned, trained, drove, or helped take care of a harness horse of the year?
Right, especially a mare, you know, winning it for the first time. You know, that just gives them you know, a good insight on how good this mare is.
Oh, no, she is absolutely awesome. In fact, there was a story that I was looking for by Bob Hayden. It was all about all these great statistics about Chardonnay, and we're going to call that up shortly, because she was not only, there were only three other fillies, Van Hanover, DeMonica Hanover, you know, Trotters, Pacers, fillies only that have been Horse of the Year. Chardonnay is the first mare ever to do it. And then not this year, this past year, but 2 years ago, she was also the first pacing mare ever to win over $1 million in a single season. And last year she came up about 25,000 short of doing it again.
Holy smokes. Hey, you know, I went to harnesslink.com. And there's mm-hmm. a real good video on there about Chardonnay that I've seen about the New Zealand bloodline and things like that. What's that link that you can go to see that? Do you have that there with you?
Yeah, I know it by heart. It's very easy. It's harnesslink.com, and that'll send you right into it. And
it's a good video.
Yeah, and the people down under, you know, they are just enamored with this horse, because really the dinner itself had a lot of horses of the year were trained by people from down under. Chardonnay's from down under. Driver of the year was Dexter Dunn. He's from down under. The Yonkers Triple last night in five races were all won by down under horses. it's really taken, because of the horse shortage in the United States and Canada, they're importing horses at an unbelievable rate from Australia and New Zealand. Those people are happy to get a decent price for their horses. The Americans are looking for horses and are willing to pay the, I think it's 15,000 round one way these days to get the horses over here. But boy, I mean, some of them in the course of 6 months have earned their money back already, and then some.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, talking about the international aspect of it, down at Pompano, they had the Living Legends?
That's coming up. Coming up. I'm sorry, you go right ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to find out a little bit more about that because I'm not real versed on, you know, the standard bread industry yet, but I noticed there's a lot of international flavor at a lot of the tracks. And I tell you what, it's fun to go out and watch, you know, people from different countries, how they ride, how they drive, you know, that type of thing.
And they just had that. Pompano Park has been the place to be this week. This past Monday and Tuesday, the Pompano Park and the South Florida Amateur Driving Club hosted the World Cup Amateur Driving Championships. And this had the top amateur drivers from nations all around the world were, you know, right at Pompano Park. And ironically, not barely getting any points on the first night of competition, the driver from Belgium, Petit Van Polart, came and swept the card on the Tuesday night to win everything. And second place was Italy's Andrea Sallusti. And third, representing Hungary, and yes, racing fans in Budapest, Hungary, they have major harness racing. Another Andrea, I can't pronounce her last name, but it's sort of like Trzyskas, came and finished third. Our representative, Joe Panaccio for the USA, he won a race on Monday's, the first night's card, but he was a little bit shut out for the rest of the tournament. But, I mean, it was just great to have all these fans there. And the gentleman from Belgium, Petit Van Housen, he had 20 or 30 fans there, and they all wore shirts with the flag of their country on it and Petit's name. And it was really exciting. The president of the United States Chief Executive Officer, Mike Tanner from the USTA, even came out and he presented the Leading Driver Award. But other states there was Canada, Spain, which people don't realize, but they have harness racing in Spain. They had representatives from Sweden, from New Zealand, from Austria, and last year's return winner from Argentina, and also a representative from Denmark. So, it was different because for the people coming from Europe who only drive trotters all their lives, they had to drive pacers.
Yeah.
And that made it a little more interesting.
Yeah. You'd have got a kick out of this here at Sunshine Meadows. They all came out to train horses for various trainers out here. We had all the top drivers from the States and, you know, from Europe. And it was so comical. We have a tack shop here on property called Sunshine and Horses. Rick and Liz Shout have it. And it's a small, you know, type trailer. And this white van pulls up, and I told Rick, I said, Rick, I said, you're in trouble, buddy. I said, you better get behind that cash register. 25 people get out of this van. 18 of them could fit into the tack shop. And they were just so amazed that they had everything right at their hand, right there, you know. And I got to talk to quite a few of them, you know, and it's really interesting how they see us and how we see them, you know. And I think it's great for the sport. We need to do this more often.
Oh, no, absolutely. There was another thing now. That was earlier in the week at Pompano Park. Now, let's get up to what's going to happen on Sunday at Pompano Park. And they Pompano Park, and my understanding is that Stacy Cahill, the vice president of racing at Pompano Park, she and her race secretary, Josie Ambito, have been able to get 8 of the top harness racing drivers in the sport, all living legends, all coming down here to compete Sunday in four championship races. And we're talking the cream of the crop here. We're talking Dave Pallone, 19,000 career wins. Tony Morgan, 16,000 career wins. Dave Miller, almost 13,000. Tim Tietrich, over 11,000. Wally Hennessy, over 10,000 wins. Kevin Wallace, over 10,000 wins. Peter Wren, at 10,000 wins and making his return, the all-time winningest driver ever at Pompano Park. Bruce Rangers coming down from Maine, and he's nearing his 10,000th career win. What a line. I can just see some of these trainers saying, you know, when we have driver competitions, oh, we're going to let so-and-so come and drive your horse. And, you know, they might be a little funky about it. Oh, he's going to push him too hard. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. Well, then you tell them, well, we're going to put Dave Pallone or Tim Tietrich or Dave Miller on your horse. And you, their faces just light up and say, well, I don't care which one.
Yeah. Hey, are they going to have, like, any festivities there for this? Or will they be people be able to come down and sign autographs? Or, you know, will they
well,
be able to get
I'm trying to find out because they talked about how the races are how they're also having an amateur pro-am battle for the Make-A-Wish Foundation and New Vocations, the Horse Retirement Foundation. But I haven't seen anything yet about trying to set up a driver's autograph or something, which, man, if they don't do it, they're missing out. I mean, I'm going to be there no matter what because I want to, you know, but to get all these guys to be able to drive on the same card, you might see it on a Grand Circuit day, maybe with a Breeder's Crown. I don't think it would be all of these, but, gosh, you got the 10,000-plus win club. I think the eight drivers together have won over 110,000 races.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I tell you, if we could find out, you know, maybe we could get that up on our website and let them know because, you know, it's right here in Pompano. It's easy to get to. You know, it's a good time to go there. You know, good food, good entertainment. You know, and we need to get more people out, you know, to see them. Because this literally could be Pompano's last year, you know, of racing there.
Well, we don't want to look at the negatives, but it may well be, as you said. But at least, you know, here for this week of the year, they're in the spotlight. They're doing the right things. They're good. They had a lot of people come out Monday and Tuesday, and then hopefully Sunday night. Although, you know, as we broadcast this show this morning, early this morning here, it was about, 48 degrees with a wind chill of about 35.
Right.
And we're not used to that for going out and sitting outside all night. But
I couldn't tell you about it.
Yeah, it might be worth it, I think, just to be able to come out and see all these drivers.
Oh, I do too, you know, and it's history. And that's what, you know, we're trying to get across to people. You know, if they could just go out, you know, like that Sunday night out there, that's history. You know, you'll never be able to see that again, you know, because it just doesn't happen that often, you know.
No. And I have to think back because when I was the senior director of operations at Pompano, I held a driver's tournament, I think it was 2005, 2004, like I had done at Freehold Raceway for many years. And I was able to get Hervé Filion and Walter Case and to come down. And I'm trying to remember some of the other drivers. But just the fact that I was able to get Walter Case and Hervé Filion down to drive in the same car would be worth any admission price to see them.
Oh, yeah.
But that was years ago, and now, of course, Hervé is gone, and Walter's not driving as much, but the new breed of drivers are here. And what about Dave Pallone? He's going to probably hit 20,000 wins one day. And I don't know if anyone,
now,
I mean, over 19,000 wins.
Now, you just put that in perspective and think about this. 19,000 wins. That's 19,000 days. Let's see if he can. That's a long time. Took a long time to get there.
How about 19,000 times he's had to get in and out of the bike? That's not counting the losses. I mean, he's probably driven in 100,000 races, or maybe I think he's a little less. I think on a comparison, he's probably about 80,000 times he's gotten in and out of a race bike.
Oh yeah, and just saying with 19,000 wins, that's at least 60,000. Way to go, good job.
Yeah, yeah. I think his 401k is healthy.
Yeah. See, what other tracks have we got coming up that we should start looking at?
I know the
Meadowlands is going good.
The Meadowlands is going good. Dover Downs is having some good races. They're getting. You know what? These key horses aren't looking to battle each other early on. They want to get probably a one or two good qualifiers, then a soft first race if they can, and then be ready to bang it out. But all the top pacing horses and mares in the country are gearing up now for the Levy Series, the MGM Grand Series at Yonkers, which is 5 weeks, 50,000 each week, and then a $500,000 final. And then the mares, I think they're going for 5 weeks for $40,000 apiece, and then a $400,000 final. I mean, that's big money, and that's the kind of race that you turn your horse out a little earlier if need be, but you bring it back and make sure it's ready, because that's an awful lot of money. That's there's four is two, that's 100. I mean, if a horse could sweep it all, they'd be making $500,000 year.
Yeah, what about the Mohawk Million? I see where the Mohawk Million filled.
Yes, they got nine people to each put up $55,000 first deposit, because then they're going to have to put another $55,000 deposit on to be able to race for this $1 million. It'll be in late September. And, of course, the winner of the William Wellwood Memorial at Mohawk, whoever wins that race will automatically get a buy into the $1 million race. So that is real exciting.
That's in September?
Yes, end of September. But they have not yet announced who the nine people are that are putting up the $110,000 each. They're all and they're waiting to get that situation so that they can announce that to the public.
Well, you know,
it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, just like the Mohawk Millionaire, you know, there's a lot of innovative ideas in the standardbred business, you know, that I'm really impressed with. You know, like this Jimmy Freight. You know, it's interesting what the owners and the breeders have done with that horse, you know, in order to get, get people involved in the business, you know, and. You know, to see, you know, 100,000, what is the purse's 100,000 for anybody that wins the race that has bred to Jimmy Freight?
Oh, yeah. Anyone that breeds to Jimmy Freight, those resulting foals will be eligible, or the top 10 will be eligible to a $100,000 race just for them during their 2-year-old season. And on top of it, they're also having $20,000 in breeder awards just to the top Jimmy Freight foals that race. So, yeah. I mean, you breed to them, you pay your stud fee, you get your foal, and then hopefully he or she makes the races. And now you're looking at an extra race for $100,000 and extra breeder awards. It's a super idea by Adriana Sorello, the owner of Jimmy Freight.
Yeah,
I hope he gets another good one.
Yeah, heck yeah. You know, what's interesting is, like, on his Facebook page, he's got a little deal that, you know, he sends out to people, and it's a wheel you spin, and you can win pizza, and, you know, you can win all kinds of stuff there. So.
Oh, yeah, you know, he's a great gift card. He made his money as a master promoter on the Internet, and he knows how to do things and study the situation. I mean, what he came up and did is almost like a combination of what people used to do many years ago. Only he did his history, read up about it, and changed it, and you know, put some more pizzazz into it, and it's made a name for himself. I really hope he gets some great mares to race there.
Well, you know, we need to do that in the business, and to get the fans out there. You know, it's a good afternoon or it's a good evening. You know, a lot of people, when they come to Florida, they might not be the beach type people. And, you know, they could go over to Pompano or to Gulfstream and, you know, enjoy themselves pretty good.
I got to tell you a story, Scott. I was born and raised in Flemington, New Jersey, on a dairy farm. And we used to bale somewhere upwards of maybe 10,000, 5,000 bales of hay, 5,000 bales of straw in the course of the summer. But when we had that week or two break in between when there wasn't any hay to make, when the sun was shining, we used to go on a week vacation to the beach. And when we did that, we went to Asbury Park, which is right by Freehold. And sure enough, on a miserable day, if it was raining or something, my father would grab my brother and I and take us to Freehold Raceway.
Yeah.
And he'd make us sit there right at a certain spot and hold on to the stair poles and sit in the stairs and wait for a race or so. And Pop would come back with some sodas and hot dogs and betting tickets and a program. And we'd make an afternoon of it, which I remember how crowded it was too back then in the summer. But
the races are
good.
A lot of the people in the horse business, and especially the standardbreds, and on a future Flying Turn shows, going to be doing some things with a website called Horse Nation. And what they do is they take retired horses from the standardbred industry, and they get them ready to show. And there has been a huge, huge success rate with standardbreds going into eventing, the three-day eventing, like they do at Rolex and Lexington in the spring. And I tell you, it's phenomenal. We're going to do an 8-part series on standardbreds and how they make the conversion from trotting and pacing to show jumping and dressage and to three-day eventing, and there's just so much out there for people to enjoy, and I'd love for them to start calling us and asking us how to get to the places that we talk about. We'd love to tell them how to get there.
Yeah, we'll work on that for the next show. And yes, Horse Nation is great. In fact, they're running a story right now about riding retired racehorses and a comparison of standardbred and thoroughbred, because the standardbred horse has such great durability, and they're just about the right size for most people. I mean, a rather large person, might have to find a really big standardbred out there, but they pace. Or they trot, they can jump. I mean, maybe not as big as some of the ones that are bred to jump, but I remember years ago when the Olympics was in Seoul, Korea, a standardbred went on the team over there to compete. I mean, that's how, and that horse that went there, he had won $100,000 racing, had a record, 25, 30 years ago of 159, which back then was very good, but he injured himself, and when he came back, he wasn't good enough for racing. But a banker lady took him in and trained him and took him to the Olympics. So it just shows how versatile these horses are. And unlike a standardbred, a thoroughbred, a standardbred is much more gentler, easier to break, easier for riding and commands. And because of their barrel and their leg strength, they last a lot longer.
Right. Well, what's interesting is our listeners have to think about this one for a little bit. It would be, when we're talking standardbreds, thoroughbreds, warm bloods, what have you, competing for like the Olympics. You don't have to be a specific breed, to go into the Olympics. like you do to be a thoroughbred or a standardbred. It would be like taking a baseball player, football player, basketball player, and a bowler, and have them competing, you know, at various, you know, events and all, you know. And so that's what, again, you know, say it's great, you know, to get out and see the horses.
Yeah, it's a real credit to the standardbred about how versatile they are, that they can be adapted to compete in almost anything you want to put them to. I mean, I think they're that good. But let me tell you, I'd be remiss if I didn't back up a bit, back to the Dan Patch Awards weekend, the Harness Writers annual meetings, because we need a little. They had voting for the Communicators Hall of Fame, and going on the list. This is being nominated. In other words, they have to go on the list in September, and they have to get 75% yes votes of the 200 voting members in order to go into the Communicators Hall of Fame. And the two people selected, one is Jay Bergman, who still writes occasionally, but for 25 years was the main face of Sports Eye and a top columnist, event writer. He's now with Sports Eye, which is now a division of the Daily Racing Form. And the other nominee that's going on the ballot is Joe Kyle, and he's the Hervey Award-winning photographer for 40 years with the Horseman and Fair World magazine. But now both of them are going to go on the ballot for voting for the Hall of Fame induction in September. And also, we want to point out and congratulate Kim Rinker, who works as the publicity and media specialist for the Ohio Racing Commission and the Ohio Sire Stakes, as she was voted the new president of the United States Harness Writers Association. And the U.S. Harness Writers Treasurer, Barry Lefkowitz, who was the former PR man at Roosevelt and Yonkers Raceway, he was voted vice president. The outgoing president, Sean Wiles, he now gets to sit back and smoke a big cigar as chairman of the board of Oshawa.
There you go. It sounds like you didn't have much time to enjoy it up there. You were working all the time.
You know, not only working, but the Rosen's Shingle Creek Hotel is a 5-star place, and it is gorgeous, and it has like 15 restaurants. And to go from your room, depending where you were, to the banquet hall or to the storage rooms where we prepare all the gift bags and get everything ready for, you know, days before the big event. I think I was walking 10,000 steps a day for the week, for the 3 days I was there. So, yeah, I got more exercise than I would swim in 50 laps.
Yeah, heck yeah. Hey, speaking of, you know, all the awards and accolades that have been handed out, we're starting on the road for next year, and the Breeders' Crown's going to be coming up here this summer. A lot of races leading towards that. So, you know,
that's going to be big. Yeah, that's going to be big because it's back at Hoosier Park, and anyone who was there 2 years ago know that Hoosier Park puts on one of the best Breeder Crown Knights of Champion races you can imagine. And if they've got it again, you know, it's going to be another big deal. And there's a long road that leads to that. And, you know, it's for some horses, the older horses, it's just getting started now. The 3-year-olds are going to be popping up in a while. They're all gearing up for the summer. And then hopefully that they stay together and that they can go in the Breeders' Crown, which is, it's truly, their slogan is absolutely true. It all comes down to the Breeders' Crown.
Well, I'm gonna jump into forecasting who I think next year, or you know, through the season will be there at the end. On the deck out here at Sunshine Meadows on Saturday, we've got some phenomenal, you know, trainers here. We got some well-bred horses, and we have a book. And on the deck, they hand out a book, and it's got all the horses listed here. And when they go out to the track, they got a number on them. And, you know, that number coincides within the book. And so you can look at them and see who's who, watch what, you know, the trainers, owners, so forth. And I'm going to start marking them, the ones that I like.
Well, that's what you need to do. Get your fantasy stable together. And, and the stable roster books are free. Just come on out to Sunshine Meadows. Come out to the winner's circle, to the finish line area. That's where we have on the deck. It's usually from maybe 8 a.m. till 10 or 11 in the morning. And the only trouble is, if you're watching the Tony Alagna barn, you're going to see 15 horses in each training session. And it's hard to keep up on all those numbers.
Oh, I know. Yeah, and if you want to see Casey Coleman, you got to get out here before 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, I think 5 will be okay, but absolutely, because by 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning, they're done and they're rubbing horses and walking them already. I mean, I've never seen that. Her operation is you work hard, but you know what? The rewards are great when if you're a top groom for one of those stables, you get bonuses, you get paddocks, you get taken care of, all sorts of meals and food. I mean, it's really, you know, for those of, if anyone's ever interested in becoming a caretaker, come to On the Deck, and we'll hook you up with one of the trainers to give it a try.
Yeah.
You can even come and you can audition a little, and if things work out, you might end up going north with them.
There you go. Now that we talked about, you know, getting on the road to the Breeders' Crown and everything, I'll switch gears here a little bit and start talking about Kentucky Derby.
There we go.
Saturday, we've got the Classic Tipton Fountain of Youth Stakes, and that's usually a pretty good race, you know, to judge what kind of horse you have. And this year, they've got 12 horses, and that'll be running. One of them is Dennis's Moment. He is installed as the favorite for this year. He ran good in the Breeders' Cup last year. But, you know, it's really interesting this year. This thing is wide open. It is wide open. The Fountain of Youth will probably be better than the Florida Derby this year.
And no way.
Oh, yeah. And now, you know, I was talking to some of the trainers this morning, and one of the things that they were talking about, especially Dale Roman, is you got to start picking your road to the Kentucky Derby. If you fare well here in the Fountain of Youth, then you can go right on over to, 4 weeks later, you can go down to the Florida Derby. But if you don't do so good, then you start looking towards Hot Springs, the Arkansas Derby, the Louisiana Derby, the other tracks that might benefit your horse. A lot plays into it. It's going to be an exciting Kentucky Derby this year.
Santa Anita Derby, too, for those horses out west.
Yes, exactly. You know, and so, like Bob Baffert, he's got like 6 horses, in his barn. Pletcher's got, quite a few. And one of the things that I was thinking about was these undercards, that are on these race days like Saturday. And I know that a couple of the trainers that I worked for, we headed different ways to go to the Derby back in the early 90s. And one of them was the Hutchinson. And it's a 6-furlong race. And it's usually pretty good race, tough. And, if you've got a horse that can fare well in that, then you can, think about going to, the Florida Derby or possibly, go up to New York, to run. But it's 6 furlongs, and the Fountain of Youth, is a little bit longer. It's 1 1/16. And you've got to really plan and, your road to the Derby. And all these races are coming up, especially here in South Florida. We got Tampa Bay Derby coming up soon. We got a lot of things going there. And the one thing I'm looking forward to is when the springtime hits Kentucky. Beautiful in Kentucky in the springtime.
Well, hopefully, hopefully it won't be. It's been a muddy track, I think, the last couple of years.
Yes.
Well, let me ask you this. There's a horse that's heading to Oaklawn's Rebel Stakes, a three-year-old. His name is No Parole.
Right.
Right. I don't know if you know it. Tell us a little bit. I know he's undefeated.
Yeah.
But he's only had three starts.
Right. Well, you know, see, that's just it. Yeah. You know, when they start coming up, they had the Southwest Stakes here, last week or so, though. And now, see, the Rebel is a good race to go. And like with the Hutchinson, for example, that's going to give the trainers a good measurement of what kind of horse he has. And a lot of times you get in a 6-furlong race, and that'll tell you whether he can get the mile and a 16, you know, that they would have to run, you know, for the Florida Derby. And so the Rebels, sometimes they can pop up out of there and fly under the radar, as they say. You know, he's a young horse, 3 starts, 3 wins. You know, we got to find out what he's going to be like when they get into that field. You know, if there's 10 or 12 horses or, well, you know, like with the Hutchinson, there's only 7 horses in it. And so, you know, that's not going to be you're not going to get a beat up like you could in the Fountain of Youth, you know, when you got 12 to go against.
No, and there's other, I know the Bluegrass Stake is, that's in early April, and that's another one. And I just read on the Pollock Report, there's 136 three-year-olds nominated to the, but that's $1 million.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
On the grass. When,
you know, not only can you find out a lot of this information on IENTV.org, but you say in the Pollock Report, that is one of the best news information for the horse industry that I've ever seen. You know, they tell you what it is, how it is, you know, and when it is.
And, well, all I know is whoever can win the Fountain of Youth is a horse you got to contend with for the Derby.
Exactly. But you know what's funny about this, Steve? Is I think this year, in the Fountain of Youth this year, there's a couple of nice horses in there that I was looking at. Pletcher's got some. Of course, Roman's got that Dennis's Moment. You know, but there's a horse in there that I really do like. His name is As Seen on TV. He's a Florida bred trained by Kelly Breen.
Good name.
Yeah, and I think that if he runs very well, I think Kelly might do something with him. Because Kelly, he's a good guy, and, you know, he gets a lot of good horses. And I like this colt. He's going to be carrying 122 pounds, and Dennis's Moment's got 124. You know, so it's gonna be really interesting to see, you know, how he does that. But remember, As Seen on TV and Heard on IEN.
Okay. Well, you've been prepping that one for a while. We got to take you to account on your list of your 5 Derby hopefuls.
Mm-hmm.
And or at least we should probably make it 10 since 20 going the race.
Right. Well, you know what, now, Steve? Next week, what I'll do is I'll have my 10 hopefuls, and maybe we'll get your 10 hopefuls on there, and we'll kind of follow them from now until the first Saturday in May, and we'll kind of see and. You know, who we think after this Fountain of Youth is over.
Yeah, but you know what? You've got an inside track, but I'm going to give it a whirl.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, speaking of the Derby, Churchill Downs, forever since they've had, you know, the Derby, if they got more than, you know, 12 horses, they had an auxiliary starting gate. And so this year they have developed a brand-new starting gate. It's a 20-stall starting gate, and you know,
one whole unit,
and you know, that's going to take a lot of the disadvantage, you know, out of it, because they're all going to be starting, you know, literally together. They don't have that, you know, 8-foot gap in between, you know, the main gate and the auxiliary gate.
No, I understand that. It'll be it'll really be a cavalry charge to the first turn.
Don't you know? And see, you know, used to a lot of jockeys, they like getting on the end or the beginning, or well, on the end of the main gate and then on the beginning of the auxiliary gate, because it gave them a little room inside there. If the horse worked bad, they had a little room to go, you know. But when you got a 20 stall in there, if you break bad, buddy, it could be done and first jump out of the gate, you know. So it's
going to be. No, I understand that. Yeah. And it really shows there a major, major difference between harness racing and thoroughbred racing, that, you know, the break out of the gate is so, so important, where in harness racing, especially if the horse is a closer, that they want to actually back off the gate at the start,
right,
let everyone else get taken care of up front and then work their way.
Right. Well, you know, that was like in Paris when you were there, how they started the horses there, that was just, you know, it is mind-boggling. You know, I couldn't believe that they did what they did.
Yeah, the fact that you don't have a real starting position, you decide what group you pretty much want to go in. If you want to be in the early leavers or the late closers, or you just want to sit in the middle of the pack, and it just so happened that the driver, veteran driver, Ollie Goop, got into the right pack, who led him all the way around till the top of the stretch, where he shook, you know, he got an opening and cruised to victory.
Right.
I don't think it's not that simple in the thoroughbred racing.
No, it's not. Well, with, you know, on how they get there and the road to the Kentucky Derby, one of the things that we're going to be doing on Chuck Wagon, Patricia's going to be working out some Derby dinners for us, you know, on how to prepare for when you go to the races if you're in an RV.
Now you're talking, because you turned me on, and I've been checking out this
Keystone
Montana, and it's like the presidential suite at the Rosen Shingle Creek. It's got everything.
Oh yeah, and you know, more and more horsemen are doing that nowadays, especially, you know, like at the show horse end of it, and a lot of the tracks, the thoroughbred tracks now, are you know, trying to implement campgrounds, you know, for the owners and the trainers, because, you know, you could be somewhere for 3 months and it's hard to rent an apartment or, you know, get a motel for 3 months. And so the RV business has just really exploded. And Keystone Montana will accommodate you. You can go in and talk with them and tell them what you're looking for and how you're, you know, where you're traveling. And they were literally sit down and design you, you know, an RV, and you can get it within, you know, within 3 or 4 months' time.
I saw anywhere from $30,000 to $250,000 they have units available, and they're gorgeous.
And I tell you, the one that I like is the 3701 FL, and let me tell you, it is great. They got good size refrigerators in there, the gas and electric. You know, they have a washer and dryer units that you can install. You know, it's like going into a home. And so Patricia's going to be working on some snacks and, you know, how to feed the equestrians at those events. And, you know, so we got a lot of things going. You know, on what we're doing, it's starting to make headway. But the main thing is we got to get listeners and get people out to visit these equestrian events. You know, 3-day Rolex is coming up here in Lexington at the end of April. The Derby is the 1st of May. You know, there's just so many things that are going on that, you know, people should get out and enjoy. And you know what, Steve? A lot of times, a lot of these events are free to go to.
You're absolutely right, and there's no reason for anyone not to. Whatever your town you're visiting or staying in, more than likely within a half hour to an hour, there's going to be a racetrack or dressage or special eventing taking place, and it makes for a great day of enjoyment or night.
Right. Well, you know, if you go to like floridafresh.org, it's a state website, you can look up, you know, the different farms that we have here in Florida. And there's
right.
a lot of times the farm tours are free, you know, especially when you're in Kentucky. You know, if you're going up to Kentucky this summer to visit, go out to the horse park, you know, and you can see the horse farm tours, like at Windstar Farm where I worked at. You know, we had horse park tours there that would come out to see. Calumet Farm, you know, they had horse tours. And, you know, it's really
Sunshine
great.
Meadows.
Yeah, Sunshine Meadows. Now, I wish we could get more out here. You know, it's nobody knew where we were at for a long time. Now they do, you know, and it's kind of nice to
right.
see.
You guys have all the hookups and everything there, and it's beautiful location and right with the horses.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the show rings up here a lot of times on Saturday. And during the weekend, the afternoons, and sometimes during the mornings, depending on what shows they're going to. We have Florida Atlantic University, and they have their equestrian team here. And, you know, you'll see 40 or 50 horses going out there training and going through the motions, and you meet the trainers and the riders, you know, that are there. And they're doing really well in Wellington this year. So that was really good. You know, and not only can you see the show horses, but you can come out and see the trotters, you know, training in the morning, you know, here. And there's a lot of farms that are like that, you know. Just call us and let us know, and we'll direct you in the right spot, you know, to them.
Yeah, I believe, Scott, that Florida is the third largest horse-populated state in all of the United States.
Oh, you got that right. And you know what? What I like about it is from 4-H, you know, to the top horses in the world, they're all here in Florida.
Cool. And everything. They're, how about the polo? How about the rodeo? How about it's
right.
unbelievable here.
Right. Well, you know, like that's another thing, too, at the polo at Palm Beach. Let me tell you. You know, that is a fantastic Sunday afternoon to go out. You see all kinds of people. There are celebrities, regular people. You know, you see the players. You see the trainers. You know, it's quite a sight, you know, to go and visit and do. You know, and Friday and Saturday Night Lights out here at Wellington,
right.
You know, they have a huge amount of people that are coming out there, and the food's good, you know, especially the vendors that are there. You know, it's just amazing. And you can find all kinds of information on how to ride. Now, like here at Sunshine Meadows, you know, we're always talking about the racing and the show horses. We do have Golden Gate Stables here. And Golden Gate Stables has trail rides out here. And they have horses for every skill level and for every size. A big old guy like me, they can throw a horse under me and I can ride with no problem. And they'll take their time and they kick.
Did you say a horse or elephant?
Well, no. See, I got big enough. I moved from a horse to a Kubota.
there you go.
That's why I do my trail rides on the Kubotas. And all, but Denise at Barn 18 at Golden Gate, Denise Molina is her name, and they do all kinds of trail rides. They do parties, you know. In fact, one time they had out there, this little girl loved horses, and she was afraid of them because they were so big. And Denise organized a birthday party for the kids to come out, and they could pet and brush the horses. They could feed them carrots, snacks. And the kid never rode the horse, but, you know, she really loved, you know, being around the horses. And so now the little girl has gotten over the fear, and she's coming out to ride. you know. So, you know, you don't have to ride to come out, you know, to see them. And it makes a great birthday party for kids, you know. It's great to do.
Well, I think you and I ought to go see them and go for a ride.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nice back here, you know. In fact, when Brandon Mills, the general manager here, first came here, we had no trail, you know. And one day he had some extra time and on his hand, which that doesn't happen too often.
No.
and I saw him look at the bush hog, and I saw him look at the woods. And next thing you know, he's driving the tractor and the bush hog through the woods, cutting a path, you know. And it's over a mile long, you know, that he put out there. And we've got all of our riders take advantage of it every day, and they do the trail rides and everything. So, you know, we would like to get people to come out and see us, come out and see Scott or Steve Saturdays, you know, at on the deck, be able to see history in the making. And, you know, enjoy your day out here, and we'll get you around the farm and tell you what it's all about and, you know, go from there.
Well, I'm ready. I'm ready when you are.
How are we doing on time? What's that?
How are we doing? I was going to say,
we're getting close.
We're on time, and we got to get ready. And next week we're going to be talking about some of the top harness horses in the country who are making their comebacks. We'll see how Chartnan does in her debut, and along with a number of other horses, they're qualifying, they're racing, they're getting more tracks coming up every week, and before you know it, it'll be springtime, and I'll have reports from at least 25 tracks a day.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and for everybody to keep up on it, you know, our website is getting better. You know, we're building on it. It's intv.org. But if you really want to get to all the harness news, you have to go check out harnesslink.com. Steve, how many articles a day do you throw in there? Or are you writing for
that? It depends. A slow day will be 12 or 13. The big days I'll be writing a couple. I'll be posting anywhere from 20 to 25 stories a day. And a new feature, which is going to take up a little more time, is that the majority of tracks that we're covering, we're going to be able to put that feature race video right into the story. It'll be embedded, so you can start reading the story, and then when you feel like it, you can just click and watch the race yourself and see how accurate we were in describing it. But it's going to be a very nice, it's a nice feature. We're already doing it for Yonkers, Meadowlands, Dover Downs, a number of the other tracks out there.
Right.
And but Harness Link, we've got it all. If you're racing in Argentina or Bermuda or Russia or Budapest or even in the United States, we're going to have coverage of it.
Yeah, well, we'd like to thank everybody for joining us today. You know, go to intv.org. You'll see how we're building our website. And if they got
and the movie of the week.
Yeah.
What's the movie of the week?
I'm going to, Dan Patch is on there now. And
we're
going to be changing it around a little bit. But on all of our shows, like Fine Turns and At the Wire, we have links on there to where you can go to the tracks and watch. You know, like if you go to it today and to At the Wire, you can watch their racing from Gulfstream live. You can watch racing from, just about anywhere live throughout the world. We've got links that you can click on and watch them live. And then hopefully we're going to be given, we'll be doing studio work where you and I will be talking about everything. You know, get a BS on TV.
Remember, we both agree we got faces for radio.
You got that right. You got that right. Steve, it's great having you back.
Oh, another great show.
Recording.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know, so I thank our guys at BBS. Go to bbs.com. They got a lot of good programming on there. And if they don't have it, you don't need to listen to it.
There you go. You're right.
Okay, Steve. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.
My pleasure, Scott.